And this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Mark Lowenthal, who's the president of the Intelligence and Security Academy, a professor at the Johns Hopkins University. He served as assistant director of Central Intelligence for Analysis and Production, vice chairman for evaluation at the National Intelligence Council, deputy assistant secretary of state for intelligence, and staff director of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Dr. Lowenthal is the author of the Standard College Graduate School textbook on intelligence, Intelligence from Secrets to Policy, now in its sixth edition. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mark Lowenthal.
Thank you, Ian.
And the fact that we plan to talk about the latest machinations over the House Intelligence Committee and Devin Nunes, and where the inquiries both in the Senate and the House into alleged Russian interference in the American elections, how much are we overshadowed by what just happened? In other words, did the bombing of Syria take this story off the headlines?
A little bit, but it's going to come back because it's not clear that Mr. Trump has a follow-on. It's not clear that this is part of a policy. This was a reaction to a specific incident, the gassing and death of 84 people. And so the Russia thing will come back, if for no other reason than Congress is not going to give it up. So it will be back. This is, and Congress is actually capable of handling more than one issue at a time, despite the way it appears.
Well, but the Congress is not a unified body, to say the least, right?
I mean, no, so, not at all.
So when you say the Congress wants to do this, is it the Democrats or the Republicans? Are they all on the same page? It doesn't seem that way with the behavior of Devin Nunes. He hasn't removed himself as chair of the House Select Intelligence, but he has stepped down from the Russia inquiry.
Right. Well, on the, you remember, there are two parts of the Congress. You know this, your viewers know this. On the Senate side, the chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, Senator Burr, and the vice chair, Mark Warner. On the Senate side, the ranking minority member is the vice chair, which is interesting. They're going ahead with their investigation, and they also understand, and it's part of the structure of the committee, the importance of a bipartisan investigation. And I think, if anything, Devin Nunes's actions put even greater pressure on them to push ahead and to keep it bipartisan. Back over on the House side, the committee that I served on, Conaway is going to be under pressure. Conaway is a congressman from Texas who is going to chair the House committee for the Russian investigation. He's going to be under pressure to get the committee back involved for institutional reasons. Devin Nunes has done incredible damage to the House Intelligence Committee as an institution. He really has hurt it very, very badly. And this is sort of a long answer. And one of the ironies is that if you watched the one open hearing that the House committee had on the Russia issue, there were three hearings going on simultaneously. Robert Comey and Admiral Rogers were trying to get facts. This is how we work in this area. The Democrats were constantly going on about Mike Flynn and Russia. And the Republicans were constantly harping on leaks. Aren't leaks terrible? So the irony here is that not only has Nunes had to recuse himself from the Russia investigation, he's now under investigation by the House Ethics Committee for leaking. So there's an institutional imperative on Conaway to get this back on track.
Well, clearly, though, Mark Lowenthal, the testimony by the director of the FBI, James Comey, and the head of the NSA, Admiral Rogers, was pretty devastating, was it not, to the White House?
Very much so. They stood by their guns. They said it happened. I mean, Mike Rogers, you know, opened his testimony saying it happened. The Russians did this. And Comey was very, very good at explaining how they do investigations and also at refuting one more time Donald Trump's allegations that Barack Obama had been tapping Trump Tower. Congressman Schiff, the ranking Democrat, said, could President Obama order a wiretap? And Comey said very clearly, no, he could not. There was a time when presidents could do that. That time is long gone. So I think they actually did a remarkably good job at testifying and not losing their cool under very adverse conditions.
And again, I'm speaking with Mark Lowenthal, who's the president of the Intelligence Security Academy. He's a professor at Johns Hopkins University and served as assistant director of Central Intelligence for Analysis and Production, vice chairman for evaluation on the National Intelligence Council, deputy assistant secretary of state for intelligence, and staff director of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. And Dr. Lowenthal is the author of the Standard College Graduate School textbook on intelligence, Intelligence from Secrets to Policy, now in its sixth edition. So how much is all of these machinations and the to and fro of Nunez in the Uber car and this young fellow on the National Security Council feeding him the documentation? It all looks as though what's really going on at the White House and at their National Security Council is an effort to get out from under the outrageous statements that the president made, tweeting out that Barack Obama was a bad, sick guy. Is that
right?
Is that at the heart of it all, that this is just...
Well, I don't think they were trying to get out from under it. I think they were trying to justify it. The name of, I don't remember, the Cohen Warnock, I think is
yeah,
the name of the...
Right, Cohen Warnock, yeah.
The staffer, the intelligence staffer, you know. He had some documents that he gave to... that he called Nunes up, and Nunes went to read. That was Nunes's first mistake. Then Nunes goes to see the president without not the heck with informing the Democrats on his committee. He didn't inform his own members on the committee. And he goes to see the president about the documents that president's staff gave him, which he says the president needs to know. That's kind of strange. Why doesn't the president's staff tell him? Why doesn't Cohen Warnock go to McMaster's, or in those days you could still go to Bannon, and go tell the president? And then Nunes gives a press conference. The number of errors, of missteps that Nunes made is fairly incalculable. And he wasn't thinking about being a member of a separate branch, and he certainly wasn't thinking about being the chairman of an investigating committee. He was thinking about still being a member of the Trump campaign. And he did himself damage, and he did the congressional oversight process damage.
But didn't he?
And I say that as somebody who was a Republican. I was a Republican staff director of the committee.
Sure.
So, I mean, I had to choose sides. And,
right.
He just did incalculable damage. It was devastating.
But he did clear it before he went to the White House. He did clear it with the head of the House, Paul Ryan.
Yeah, but that wasn't the way to do it. And Ryan, it was wrong. Ryan, if Ryan gave him clearance, Ryan was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not how you conduct intelligence oversight. You're not there to represent the President of the United States. You're there to represent your institution, which is the House and the House Intelligence Committee. Now, sometimes in oversight, you're there to defend the agencies you oversee from unwanted criticism, and sometimes you're the critic. So, you know, that defending intelligence agencies is not beyond the pale. But he was doing something else. He was trying to, sort of give some basis for Donald Trump's tweets. That had nothing to do with defending the intelligence community. If anything, he was attacking the intelligence community. He really lost the sense of who he is and what he should be doing, I'm afraid.
Right. But that's what I was suggesting, that it seems to be all about trying to give the president cover for his tweets. And I don't know whether this business about bringing the former National Security Director from the Obama administration, Susan Rice, into it, is that muddying the waters? Or is it, my understanding about incidental collection is that that just happens every day. And it's not a big deal.
Incidental collection happens every day. It does, because the nature of what we're collecting, you're going to sweep up a certain number of U.S. persons. And a U.S. person in law is not just a citizen, but anybody who's here legally with a visa and a green card. The issue they're raising with Susan Rice is that in certain instances, she asked to have the U.S. person, which is how it would be identified, unmasked. She asked to have the identity revealed to her. This is also within the terms of how this kind of material works. On occasion, you know, there'll be a case with either a foreign policy nexus, a foreign intelligence nexus, or a criminal nexus, and a senior official will say, I think we need to know who this person is. And Mike Hayden, who was the director of both NSA and the CIA, makes an interesting point on this. He says, for this material to have even reached the assistant to the president for national security affairs means that the intelligence community had already decided this is highly significant. We collect reams and reams of data every day, and the things that get passed up the line to very senior officials is obviously very small and we consider very important. So the fact that this material with a U.S. person in it was even reaching her desk means that as far as the intelligence community was concerned, this was very important. So the fact that she then asked to have U.S. persons unmasked in certain cases, it happens very rarely, but it's not impossible. It's not illegal. There's no law about this. This is an administrative procedure. So I think it does muddy the water somewhat. I mean, apparently it could have happened, but it doesn't prove anything. It's not unusual.
It's not unusual, but my understanding of the difference here is, and you just said, that the intelligence services may have alerted the National Security Advisor, as opposed to, it seems like, Cohen Watnick, the 30-year-old who McMaster wanted to fire because he was a leftover from Flynn, one of the so-called Flintstones. They wanted to get rid of him, and they couldn't because Jared Kushner and Bannon saved his job. It looks like he was actually tasking the intelligence community for, you know, just basically going, you know, hoovering up all kinds of documentation, looking for something. Is that seems like a fundamental difference.
There's a huge difference. I think, now here I'm just supposing, so let's be very clear about this.
Right.
It would seem to me that what Cohen Warner did was to go back to the intelligence community and say, were there instances in the past administration where an official asked to have U.S. persons unmasked? And, I mean, if I had received a request like that, I might try and not answer it and say there's no reason that you need to know this and things like that. But if the White House pushes hard enough, you would give up that information. And I think that was the information he then used to justify Trump's statements and the information he passed to Nunes. So how Cohen Warnick got this information really becomes important. I would suggest to you that given the changes in the National Security Council staff over the last week, that Mr. Cohen Warnick's days may be numbered. As you said, McMaster's wanted him out. Bannon and Kushner saved him, but clearly Bannon and Kushner had a falling out. Bannon has lost status. So I would think that McMaster's may still go after Cohen Warnick.
And just following up on that, Mark Lowenthal, because we learn now that the Deputy National Security Advisor, K.T. McFarland, is also being eased out and given the ambassadorship to Singapore.
Yes, but she's a very nice post, by the way. Mm-hmm. But yes, I mean, she was another person brought in by Flynn. She doesn't have a national security background, per se. She's a journalist, no offense, but she's not a national security official. And, McMaster's apparently, when he took the job and after Flynn was fired, they apparently had a lot of trouble finding someone to take the job. McMaster's apparently said, I'd have to be able to name my own staff, and he was apparently told he could, and then it turned out that he couldn't. He apparently waited that out, and now he's making the changes that he wanted to make when he succeeded Flynn. So there are still some changes to come, I think, on the NSC staff. I mean, the changes that we saw this last week were obviously very important, very, very significant.
So turning back to the Russian inquiry, which definitely has been swept off the headlines by the bombing in Syria, and some speculate that that was on purpose, although I think the evidence would indicate, at least to me, that the president is very susceptible to television images. He watches a lot of television, doesn't he?
Yes.
So
he's also susceptible to his daughter, who apparently raised with him the horror of what the Syrians had done.
Right. This is at a time when her daughter is singing for the Chinese First Lady.
Yes. If you wrote this as a novel, nobody would buy it. I'm sorry. They just wouldn't.
Right. But, the Chinese love Trump and Ivanka. They think she's a goddess.
Although it's interesting, the Chinese didn't say anything. Trump told Xi Jinping at dinner, oh, by the way, we're bombing Syria. The Chinese, very tasteful people. They waited until Xi Jinping had left the United States, and now the Chinese press is going after Trump for what he did. Right. But I don't think Trump did this to sidetrack the Russia investigation. I think the Susan Rice business was meant to muddy the waters, as you said. But the Russia investigation is not going to go away.
Right.
It's gonna come back. There's just too many odds and ends out there. I mean, they want to interview Jared Kushner and his relationship with the bank. They're going to interview Manafort. what's the name of the aide who said he went to, denied he went to Russia? Carter Page?
Carter Page, right.
Aide denied he went to Russia. Then it turned out he went to Russia. And now he's saying, I didn't give the Russian intelligence services anything significant.
Well,
what did you give
him? Right, but the Russian intelligence services, now we learn, tried to recruit him.
Yes, so, which is what they do.
Right, exactly.
But that's important. The fact that this man who is very senior in the Trump campaign, of course, you know, Spicer keeps denying that he's ever heard of Manafort and Page, which is also a separate sideshow. I mean, that's something that you want to know. You want to know how did they, what were they trying to get from you? What did they approach you with? I mean, these are important data points if you're in doing counterintelligence that you really want to know. They're significant. So this investigation, Syria notwithstanding, is not going away. It will be back. It may be taking a breather at this point. Clearly, the House Intelligence Committee has to regroup after Nunes was forced to recuse himself. The Senate committee is still there. Warner and Burr are trying very hard to keep this, as I said, on a bipartisan track. It's not going away. It isn't. It right. can't.
But already, though, Nunes did cancel what seemed to me an important public hearing where we would have heard from the former acting Attorney General Sally Yates, the former
yes.
head of the CIA, John Brennan, and the former DNI, General Clapper. I think that would have been useful, wouldn't it? So,
yes, it would have been very useful, but I think it's going to come back. You know, when you're doing hearings like this, the way this works is that the two staffs, there's a Democratic and a Republican staff on every committee. So in this case, the Republican staff, the majority staff, will talk to the Democratic staff and say, look, we're planning to have a hearing on such and such a date. These are the witnesses we want to have. Are you okay with that, or are there other witnesses? So that you have some semblance of agreement on a hearing. And I can assure you that Mr. Schiff and the Democrats are not going to let this go, and they're not going to agree to only have classified hearings. They want to have these hearings in public. And so Conway is going to be under a certain amount of pressure to stabilize the situation with his minority members, Democrats, and to make the committee look viable again. So I would not be surprised to see that hearing come back. And it's a good idea. I think you'll see that hearing again. And they will also have to have closed hearings. They're going to have to talk to counterintelligence staffs and collection staffs about, you know, what did you know about the Russians were doing on a classified basis, contemporaneous with what the public story was. So it can't all be done in public, but I think that hearing will come back.
Well, just in closing, Mark Lowenthal, we're now learning that the former head of the CIA, John Brennan, knew about the Russian interference in the elections and briefed senior lawmakers back in July about
right.
the extent that the Russians were working to help elect Donald Trump president. Now, I find it absolutely mystifying that President Obama didn't make more of an issue of this, because this is like a Pearl Harbor on the very nature of American democracy, and it's a big deal, and he didn't make a big deal out of it. And then Hillary Clinton, now I learned from some people close to her, is that she's furious that her own people, Sullivan and Podesta, didn't brief her fully on the extent of Russian activity. So, and she mm-hmm. and she would have made more of a deal out of it on the campaign trail. I'm not making excuses for her, because she ran an awful campaign, but
yes.
I'm mystified by Obama. What do you make of the fact that he didn't make more of a deal, big deal out of it? Because Trump himself has forward. You
I
know?
Would disagree somewhat with your character. It was not another Pearl Harbor, but I would disagree with that. But yeah. I think I understand why President Obama might not do anything about it, because that would then give the appearance that he was using the intelligence community to support Hillary Clinton. And I think even though he had knowledge of this, I think it puts him in a very awkward position in terms of what you do about it. If you make this public, it then, like I said, it looks like you're using intelligence. You're declassifying intelligence. And the president has the right to declassify anything he wants. The president does not face any barriers to declassification, unlike every other official in the U.S. government. I always make this point to my classes. The president, by definition, cannot leak. But if the president had made that public, he would have been accused of using classified intelligence in an election campaign. And I think that was probably the restraint that he faced. I think that was why he ended up not doing it. Now, was that the right thing to do or not? Tough call. I'm not sure. But I think I understand the hesitancy about going public with it. And you know, you can look back and say maybe that was a mistake in terms of U.S. interests. I think that's an arguable point. As you said, I don't think it would have changed the outcome of the election. Hillary Clinton did not lose this election because of the Russians. They certainly didn't help her at all, but they didn't cause the... In fact, Comey and Rogers were very firm on that. Right. They did not influence the outcome of the election. They tried to interfere in the election, and Putin had two goals. One was he preferred one candidate over another. That's not a big deal. The French are having an election. We have a preference. We don't want Marine Le Pen. I mean, Donald Trump might, but the rest of the government probably doesn't. We prefer that the British stayed inside the EU. So other countries have preferences and other countries vote. But the other thing that Putin was aiming for, and here, unfortunately, he's already succeeded, he wanted to cast doubt on the legitimacy of our electoral process. Because we raised issues about his election, and he wanted to say, you know, I used to be in the arms control business, and we would negotiate with the Russians, and we would accuse them sometimes of violating a treaty. And the response was sort of along the following lines. No, we're not. So are you. Well, you know, this is where Putin is with the election. You know, my election may be corrupt, but so is yours. And he, unfortunately, he succeeded in that. That's already a win for him. Like I said, but I think I can understand the counter-argument in the White House to not going public. And also, it's not clear how, you know, when you have something like that, you want to be really, really sure that the intelligence is accurate. You want to make sure it's not a blip. You want to see a pattern over time. You want to have multiple sources. And so it's not like, you know, you get this one piece of paper, you run to the White House, the president says something. Sure. It's a much more thoughtful, accumulative process most of the time. And so I can understand that restraint as well.
Well, just a quick last question and quick answer, if you don't mind. Why, yes, then does Donald Trump himself, of all the people who should clear the air, who's been accused of having Putin help elect him, you'd think that this guy would want to get out there in front of this and tell the world from day one that he had nothing to do with it, and instead he keeps obfuscating, which makes him look guilty.
Yes, it does. But you have to understand, Donald Trump was raised in the Roy Cohn School of Public Relations. When you're attacked, attack back. It doesn't have to be true. It doesn't have to be completely plausible. But get something else out there to divert the conversation. Roy Cohn was a master at this. He worked for Joe McCarthy, and he had a big hand in the schooling of Donald Trump. That's the answer.
Well, Mark Lowenthal, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
And again, I'm speaking with Mark Lowenthal, who's the president of the Intelligence Security Academy. He's a professor at Johns Hopkins University and served as assistant director for Center Intelligence for Analysis and Production, vice chairman for evaluation on the National Intelligence Council, deputy assistant secretary of state for intelligence, and staff director of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Dr. Lowenthal is the author of the Standard College Graduate School textbook on intelligence, Intelligence from Secrets to Policy, now in its sixth edition. And we're going to take a brief station break. We're back looking to the cheerleading in the press for Donald Trump's bombing of Syria.